This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Shut up and sit down.
Hello and welcome back to Fourth Down Focus. I am Dan Lundy, host of the podcast and founder of Fourth Down University. Before we meet our new guest, I'd like to remind you about our partners at Bet Online. They are the fastest and easiest way to wager on all of your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Basketball is back, and Bet Online is your number one source for the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, games trends, and your continued source for all sports wagering information. BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet on your favorite sports and events, whether that's NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or golf. Head to betonline.ag to receive your 50% welcome bonus on a first deposit. And make sure to use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts. Episode 83 of the podcast welcomes Jaden Oberkrom, a former All-American kicker at Texas Christian University who holds several Big 12 and TCU records. After his playing career, he founded Oberkrom Kicking. And if I'm butchering your name, I apologize, Jaden, but this is the first time I've met you, and this is my favorite type of show. I think this is a great way to get to know someone, and I have a lot of respect for you. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. No, last name was good. You did good. Okay. Yeah, I'm excited to be here, And yeah, I played at TCU, and but before we start, I got to say we're 11-0 right now, man. So we're staring the college football playoffs in the eyes, and we're two games away from it. So,
man, I'll be honest with you, because I do this little like pick'em league with. There's about 100 dudes in Daytona Beach area, and just it's grown over the years. But basically, the guy that coordinates or facilitates, he'll pick 13 games, and it's just straight up. We're not playing like spreads or anything, and I've done really well this year. Like I'm third or so. I'm not going to probably win it all unless I have a great ending this week. But I will say that I've had a very difficult time with TCU because I've doubted them on a few, probably two or three games where I was wrong. And so that's one of my least favorite teams this year in college football, but it's for the right reason. They kept winning. And and finally I was just like, you know what? So I rolled with the Horned Frogs for I'd say the last few, but I doubted you guys. And you know what I'm saying? You guys had some very tough games a few weeks back, consecutive games too. So it's a neat program. And so I'm excited to talk to someone that played there. You had a phenomenal career there. So I'd like, because the majority of our listeners are, you know, high school kids that want to be where you were, mm-hmm. or these parents, you know, they want to support that dream. I'd love for you to tell this audience, like, what are some things or a thing that stands out to you that helped you prepare to be successful at the FBS level?
Yeah. So leading up to that, just kind of looking back through high school. So I started kicking in eighth grade. So I started pretty young, had the soccer background. And I got with a coach in the area and just started working and working and working. And I mean, I'll put it this way. So when I couldn't drive, I would wait for my dad to get home and I'd say, hey, dad, like, you know, like try to beg him to take me to the field, which he would. But I mean, that was the drive and the passion that I had as far as the kicking game when I was in eighth, ninth, and 10th grade. And then I started driving myself. And man, I was kicking, you know, 4 or 5 times a week, in the winter, in the summer, fall, spring. I mean, I couldn't stop. And then obviously lifting weights, and this is pre-Twitter. So instead of getting on Twitter, we made a bunch of, we made 50 packets of like DVDs and my resume and a couple of awards I had achieved. And we shipped them to 50 of the colleges that I was interested in. You know, Twitter makes it so much easier now, but man, as far as what I did, I kicked a lot. I self-marketed, I worked out a ton. I tried to eat a lot and yeah, just try to let the game tape, speak for itself. I hit a 54 in a game my sophomore year. And then I hit a 60 in a game my senior year. So there's a lot of big kicks that kind of helps, but a lot of the work was done behind the scenes.
I did catch the one you posted the other day, and you were like, you know, what was your biggest kick? And you shared at each level. And that was a really neat post that not many people can say they've done. You've made some kicks in games that are significantly long. And I'd love to go do a whole podcast with you and your thoughts about marketing oneself, right? Because kids that I see on Twitter, and a lot of them I don't know, and I'm sure they do the same thing to you. They hit you up and, can you help me? Can you, you know, and I've never met the kids. So first of all, it's very hard for me. I usually, what I'll do in that situation, if it's from Texas, I'll refer them to the closest coach, whether it's you or Egan Gatto. There's a number of people in the country, mm-hmm. right? I want someone that I trust to put their hands on them and see if they're in fact good enough for the level that they think they are. Because all I can see on Twitter is one 60-yard field goal that you made. out of the 15 or 16 that you attempted with a wind aid that you can clearly see because your shorts are freaking going nuts, right? And I think there's value in showing range, but I also think these kids need to realize that these coaches are making these decisions to feed their family.
Yeah.
And there's got to be a large sample size. So I liked how what you said was, before Twitter even existed, you were already marketing yourself effectively, right? You were doing these kicks and games, but I imagine that your training film and other things you put out there was showcasing your repeatability, because that's what I stress. I think that a lot of kids can hit a deep ball, but I mean, you're one of the few that gets an attempt outside 55 ever in their career at any level. Mm-hmm. And people don't want to say that out loud, but it's true. You know the data.
Yeah.
The expectation is that you can really, really thrive 40 to 50. And that's a lot harder than people think in games, right? It's easy off sticks. It's easy without a snap and a hold. So I'd love to talk to you more. Maybe we can do another show on that alone, mm-hmm. is what is it in fact that these college coaches are looking for? And what is it that's like a waste of your time and theirs? Because there's a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to shift the focus to, you know, after your playing career, you know, I commend you for starting Obercom Kicking. It's hard. The startup business, especially in the kicking community, is difficult, but I think people can do it if their service that they provide is valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you bring a lot to the table. We talked pre-recording about what it is I respect about you. It's much more than just teaching a kid, you know, foot positioning or, you know, plant depth and width. It's you go further. You know, you want to talk about the person, because the type of person you are is going to dictate your performance in a game, not talent. And I think you get that. So I started, you know, Fourth Down U 4 years ago, and I'm doing the same thing. I'm trying to establish a brand. What was your motivation for starting this Obercom Kicking Academy? And can you name a few specialists you've worked with during your short time doing it?
Yeah. So I remember when I signed with Jacksonville, as a free agent, and they ended up letting me go a couple months in, and then Cleveland got me on waiver the next day. And I was back home in Dallas when they got me on waiver. And I remember when I got the phone call from my agent about Cleveland, I was driving and I pulled over into like a random, I think it was like an apartment complex. And I kind of had one foot into kicking and then one foot into training. The foot that was in kicking didn't feel good. And the foot that was in training felt great. It was my calling. It's what I felt like I needed to do. And I sat in that parking lot and I prayed. I said, God, like, which route do you want me to go? And it was the clearest answer I've ever heard in my life. And it was just like, hey, like, you need to go train. And so I ended up calling my agent back. I told him I was retiring at the age of 22. He thought I was crazy. My parents thought I was crazy. My friends that, you know, I thought they were friends, right? They thought I was crazy. And yeah, I just kind of took a leap of faith and started this thing with zero guys. I mean, you know how it is. I mean, it's tough. You know, the first month, couple months, the first couple of years, it's tough. And I remember, like, this is before I had a field to train at. We were going to some, you know, juvenile detention center that had two uprights behind it on some mud grass field. And that's where I started. And, you know, I drive out there for one lesson, and I was lucky if I had two. And now it's just super, it's such a big blessing, like how big this thing has gotten. And I got to harp on TCU for a little bit, because one of those first kids I started training on that grass field was Griffin Kell, who actually hit that game winning field goal against Baylor for TCU this weekend. So he was like the third or fourth kid I ever started training. And he was a freshman in high school, or going to be a sophomore in high school when we started that. And so just kind of the road he's gone to his dream school, and obviously the school I played at. And we've signed other guys. We had a guy sign with Michigan State last year, Arkansas, Georgia Tech. We trained the Texas guy, Bert, SMU guy, obviously Griffin. We've got guys all over, and it's been really cool how it's grown, because the first couple of years we would sign some guys, but, you know, I was teaching them when they were sophomores and juniors in high school. But it's gotten to the point where we're training guys, you know, years, you know, since seventh and eighth grade now, you know, going through the program for about 5 or 6 years, who end up signing. So it's been really, it's a cool journey to watch them go through, you know, middle school to high school, and now playing on TV on Saturdays.
Wow. That's cool about this weekend. Cause one thing I want to credit you on is we do quick steps. We also do like fire situations where you just kind of have to storm to the field and kind of find your place and take your kick. You know, you don't have time to go to the spot, tap your holder on the head, take your controlled walk backs, find your 90, take your side steps, take your breathing pad. No, sometimes they don't really allow that. Like the football gods say, we're going to let you win or lose this game now, but you have to do it in the next 12 seconds. Go. And I have never been more impressed, especially with a Saturday kid. I don't know how many NFL guys would have handled that situation any better. That was phenomenal. And I don't think people realize how difficult that is, especially in that situation, because I see people on Sundays at training when we implement that drill, and it's like, it takes them a number of times. So you had to have reviewed that with him, right? I mean, that's something you've done.
Yeah. Yeah. We do that with guys every week, like a mayday call or a fire type situation. You know, what's interesting about what he was, you know, what happened that game. So he missed an extra point earlier that game, which is so weird for the kid, because the, you know, Griffin's 12 for 13 on the year. And the one he missed got blocked. And so, I mean, he really hasn't missed a kick all year, and for him to miss an extra point being, you know, 4-year starter is just so strange and so out of place. So that kick was definitely redemption for him. It was really cool to watch him do that.
Well, I'm even more impressed that I didn't remember that, but I do recall now hearing that he struggled from the start and then he built off that. I think in our position, especially kicking, field goal, place kickers, whatever, it's inevitable that you're going to miss in a public setting. You're going to miss in front of probably if you're playing for the right program like TCU, I played at Miami, you're going to miss in front of 1.2 million people if the situation's right. And that, it takes a special human being upstairs to be resilient enough and to have the faith, which I want to lead into next, faith in themselves. But faith is a word that it's all encompassing, right? I mean, it goes further than yourself. There's faith in your team, and there's faith in maybe a higher being. And we talk about on the show a lot that people have their whys. So one thing I noticed that stood out about you is that you profess your faith. And I wanted you to elaborate on this a little bit.
Yeah. So, I mean, my faith is the biggest thing in my life. You know, second to nothing, right? It's gotten me in places that I didn't think, you know, I could ever be. And that's something I relied on, when I was kicking in college, right? So I remember going out for every single field goal in practice and in games. I would pray, and I would pray the same thing every time. I would say, God, miss or make, this field goal is for you. And, you know, it's hard to mean that. It's easy to pray it, but it's really hard to mean that, especially when you end up missing the kick, right? But I'm sure you can attest, like, I can't tell you, I can't remember every field goal that I made, but I can tell you every single field goal that I missed, just because, not necessarily like it made me upset, but just because you learn so much more from the misses than the makes. And it's been so true in my life. Like, I've had a lot of stuff happen in my life that were makes, that were really good things, apart from kicking, that I didn't grow as much in. But I've had a lot of misses in my life too, apart from kicking, that really grew me spiritually and deeper as a person and a husband. That, man, I just can't explain it.
I'd like to go further with that. So I was unaware, you know, when I have people on that I don't know, I like to do a little homework. And the one thing I wanted to ask you, and you wanted to talk about, you're okay with it, is you battled something, your health, you know, you could have lost your life. Could you share a little bit about overcoming something that people might not know?
Yeah. So back in 2018, this month, I went in for just a normal kind of, I thought it was a normal checkup with a doctor, and they ended up finding a tumor when we were doing some scans, and obviously took the tumor out, and he said that it was pretty likely that it would be cancer. And so, you know, I was 24 at the time, right? And so when you're 24 in good shape and the business is picking up, you know, just got married, I was 6 months into marriage, it kind of, you're not expecting that, you know? And so I ended up having to do a little bit of chemo, not a lot, just a little. And man, it's been a journey. But I think that whenever we experience something really bad in our life, we have two options. We either run to God or we run from God. So I really took that opportunity to run to him, and the blessings that have come from that it's been insane. The number of people that the story has touched, and it's really put in perspective what's really important, because I think you can attest to this, maybe just being a business guy. You know, a lot of the times I'm thinking business, like, you know, minded and that kind of thing, and trying to roll the business and get to this, you know, number and all this stuff, and get this house and get this car and this marriage. But man, they say when you're healthy, you have 1,000 wishes. But when you're not healthy, you just have one. And so I've been in both spots where I had 1,000 wishes, 1,000 things that I wanted. But when I was sick and battling cancer, I mean, I only had one wish, and it was to get healthy. So man, it really puts a lot of stuff on the back burner that's not important. And the life lessons that have come with it, it's been breathtaking.
Amazing story, you know, and we'll talk more on that, because I think it's powerful. It's not something I've experienced, but, you know, we all have our battles, right? I want to share this, and I always bring this up on the show too, is you're looking at people's highlight reel. You know, everything we consume, whether it's television, whether it's social media, everything is only good news, unless you want to hear the bad news and you listen to the news. But there's never really anything that people want to share that, let's just be like the background. Like, I want to know, and I'm more interested in when people tell me things that they've overcome without telling people. I think that's the powerful stuff. I don't need to see you bought a Gucci bag, or, you know, you're driving a Range. I really like the people that are pretty quiet about those things, but share, because they have a good platform. They have a platform. And they share that, like, hey, I'm a human. Hey, I did this today. I messed up. Because I think that we're burying people's dreams, right? Especially these 15, 16-year-old kids. Because I'm just relating it to kicking. It's like, you're only seeing everyone's highlight reel. And it leads into my next question. You know, it's recruiting season. You help kids. I help kids. In my opinion, that's what our first thing should be to do, outside of teaching the kicking and punting art, is to help, you know, place these kids in a situation where hopefully they can go and get a degree and just be a good fit, you know, because all too often kids go above their standard or above their level because they want to wear a logo. And I know TCU's got some great uniforms and great colors, and I'd want to play for them, you know, but I might not be good enough. And I need to hear it from people like you or me, that maybe I'd be better suited at a Division II school, and I'd thrive there. I might even get all conference. And you know what? With confidence and development and time, maybe I'll transfer to an FBS program after a few years. So on Twitter, I see a lot of quote unquote, I'm blessed to receive an offer from, you know, and these posts are, I would say 9 of 10 of those posts are nothing more than a welcome to a walk-on. And the kids have gotten it on their own regard. They've applied, they've done all the hard work, and I commend them for that. But what they put out there to their peers is they got the offer. And that is a very vague statement. And I think kids take it for, oh my God, he got money and I didn't. I want you to share your thoughts on recruiting and the importance of these high school athletes and focusing on the things they can control, right? Because we can't control fake offers. But if we allow them, you know, to dictate what our attitude is going to be about how I handle my situation, I think that that's where the problem lies. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's really funny you asked that. So I had the same conversation with a kid this week that I've been working with for the past 5 years. So he called me just asking questions about, you know, why other people are getting offered and he's not. And he's a 2024 kid. So, I mean, you know, kicking kind of, it happens pretty late. So it's still pretty early for that class. So he's asking me all these questions and he goes, you know, do you think this school will offer me? And why are these guys getting offered? And I said, hey, all these things you're worried about are completely out of your control. I said, even if you go to, you know, a college camp and when the whole thing lights out, that still doesn't mean they're going to offer you. Like, you don't control that. They do. I said, but the things you control are, you know, your performance in games, your work ethic, you know, kicking on your own, you gaining weight and lifting, you know, in the gym every single day. How many times you post on Twitter, who you follow on Twitter. These are all things you control. And the more you focus on the things you control, the more things you can't control come into the picture and end up, you know, fulfilling the dreams that you had. So I think a lot of kids just get, you know, unmotivated and sad just because you see other people getting offers. You know, I'm blessed to receive an offer from fill in the blank. And man, they say comparison's the thief of all joy. And when you get on Twitter, it's really, really hard when you're not getting recruited and someone else is, not to compare. And so, again, I think I'm right there with you, man. Just as long as we're focusing on what we can control, the odds of you fulfilling that dream skyrocket.
Amen. You know, attitude is everything. I think we could say a number of cliche things, but these things are true. It's just whether we apply them or not. Like, everyone knows these cliche statements and this coach talk, and even coaches, you know, there's a lot of coaches I look at sometimes. I'm like, man, actions are what I'm looking for. You say a lot of things, but you don't do them, you know? And I think that's important that we, as coaches, we steer these people in the right directions. We're transparent. I think that a lot of people get by on being vague, you know, and they have to be, right? These college coaches, until they sign on the dotted line, these student athletes are not theirs. So they've got to entertain they got to date a lot of these guys, right? And entertain them and make them feel special and almost mislead them, right? I mean, I'm not saying they are, but it is what it is. It's not the truth. So I don't know how you define that. So I've got to be a bad guy sometimes, and I guess you do too, if you care. I think it's important to hurt short-term feelings for long-term gains. Because I think otherwise, if I lie to you in the short term and you find out later, it's going to be worse. You know, I mean, I'm okay with you being mad at me right now. And I think you're kind of like that. I don't know you too well, but that's the vibe I get from you. Because the way your players speak about you. So, with that being said, like, for those that don't know you, those in the specialist community, coaches, parents, players alike, if you had 1 minute just to say something to the specialist community, what would it be?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. You know, I not to harp on what we just talked about, but I would really just focus. I would control what you can control. That's how many times you post on Twitter. That's your work ethic in the weight room. That's your work ethic on the field. Your work ethic with your coach, your game tape. I mean, all these things you control. And we're kind of in an age where you can self-market and you can do all these things on Twitter to grow your following. And I think you've seen it too, is the people who sign the quickest with the earliest offers have been posting the most. You know, they post 2, 3, 4 times a week. And they haven't been doing it for a couple of weeks. They've been doing it for a couple of years. And, you know, their following grows, and they're always on, you know, college coaches' timelines, and it's always popping up on their feed and all this stuff. So not to harp on what we just said, but man, just control what you can control.
I agree. I think, you know, being honest, I would say that most people don't want to hear that because it's harder. Well, that means I got to work more. Well, yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Instead of complaining about someone else's situation that's not even true, maybe you should have been working on your own, you know, and that's hard to hear sometimes, because then it implies they might be being lazy, and whatever it is, whatever is going to motivate you to start taking action. And I couldn't agree more with what you're saying. And I just wish that there's more people that would tell these kids what's really up, what's really going on, and how hard it really is. And you might not make it. And I think that's okay, because that used to motivate me when someone said, I don't think you can do that. That was a motivator. And if that doesn't motivate you, then you definitely shouldn't play football. Right. Because how often did you get challenged until you were named the starter? Probably a lot, right?
Yeah.
Probably a lot.
Yeah. I remember when I was a summer going into my senior year, I went to a college kicking camp at Florida. And I'm not going to say the guy who was running it, but he's a kicking coach. And he told me to my face, he said, "Hey, you will never play college football taking three steps to the side." Instead of taking two big ones, I took three small ones. And man, when he said that, I'm like, dude, like, I mean, I to this day, I still think about it, and it still motivates me. And, you know, in all humility, like, I went to make the most field goals in Big 12 history. I mean, I made a couple field goals, dude, and I did it taking three steps to the side. And we train guys now who take three steps to the side on TV. And it's, you know, I don't think we can put kicking and form in a box. I think kind of like a golf swing. I mean, Jim Furyk's golf swing compared to Tiger Woods' golf swing are vastly different things. Tiger's the best golfer of all time, arguably. And Jim Furyk has one of the lowest rounds of all time at 58. And their golf swings are insanely different. And kicking's very similar. And so I was the same way, man. Like, I don't want you to tell me how good I'm doing. I want you to tell me how bad I'm doing. And that's what's going to motivate me to do good.
I think the strong make it, right? And I want to touch on what you said earlier, too, about it is ironic that the guys that do receive the offers in the end, they started early and they did it often. And the ones that get passed up that are equally as talented, their activity isn't there, right? They're not marketing themselves because they're more disgruntled about situations that may not be existing, you know? So all these things connect. They're all intertwined. And I like drawing a parallel to golf too. Jim Furyk is what we consider an outlier. He swings on two different planes. He might even swing on three. He's got a really, really funky swing, but I used to love watching his wrists and how they would kind of fall apart at the top of his backswing. And then on the downswing, he gets set. And it's not something that many people could probably replicate, you know, but it was in fact his, and it was unique. And a lot of people, you know, questioned it, but it took him to number two in the world at one point, to my understanding. Right. You know, I mean, let's be honest. So I also think that there's an ignorance to people who limit things, right. To say that things are white and black. I think almost everything is gray. So I love seeing a new way about going about doing anything, especially field goals, right? I think that, like you said, punting, look at punting now. It's so personal. I mean, there's so many kicks now and rolling out, and I'm a three-step rollout, or I do a one-step, you know, end over end. Oh, I actually tilt mine here for a little bit of a draw. It's getting really skilled. And I think with the emergence of people doing it and really good athletes embracing it, not just pitching and quarterback playing anymore, but these guys are like, could do those things. A lot of these guys and a lot of these punters did play quarterback and were elite golfers. I think it's important to do it your way. You know, there are rules, but I think that you and I both abide by certain things that we all believe to be true. But if your process is not personal, if it's not yours, it won't work. And I've learned that through my players. You know, I have to accommodate their needs to an extent. Mm. So thank you. I know I went off on a tangent, but you said some good stuff. Like, you really got me thinking. Mm. I'd like to, as I mentioned earlier, if you could just share a few ways that you prefer someone that could reach out to you if they want to.
Yeah. So I'm Instagram, Twitter, still old. I still got Facebook. So Instagram is just at Jay Novachrome. Twitter is Overchrome Kicking. We have a YouTube channel. It's just Jay Novachrome, which actually we started a podcast a couple weeks ago. That's kind of faith and football. So we dropped the first episode a couple weeks ago, share my testimony on that last week. The title of that one is How Cancer Saved My Life. So if you want more of the cancer story, that'll be a good one to watch. And then we're going to have Griffin Kell, who hit that field goal this week, on there by the end of the week. So
yeah, I'd like to hear that story. Jaden, it was an absolute pleasure, and it means a lot to me, everyone at Fourth Down Focus, that you're able to join us today. Please give us a 5-star rating and review. Subscribe to the show. Share with a friend. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can reach me at fourthdownu.com or on social media. Let's just give you an Instagram and Twitter is at fourthdownu. Thanks again for joining us at Fourth Down Focus, presented by Bet Online. We'll see you next week with an exciting new guest. I hope this fall and this Thanksgiving season is treating each of you well. And remember, all things, give thanks.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.